You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
Very serious.
This is the Mandatory Samson Podcast, coming to you live from Stand Up New York Labs in New York City. Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Flannery. I'm joined, as always, by my great and good friend, my co-host, Andrew Genelosi.
Hey, bud.
Welcome to the program, everybody. We have a great show lined up today. Before we get into any of the stories that we're going to cover, which we have some really good ones, we have possibly the... We a little technical difficulty. We have our own audio playing in the background. Andy's taking care of it right now. Before we get into any of the stories that we have to cover, and we have a couple of really good ones, maybe my favorite story that we're going to cover ever on the show. We got some great quotes. I'd like to mention that we have something really cool that happened this week. Me and Andy were at the studio, and we happened to notice that the Stamp Stampede, which if you guys remember, we talked about maybe like 2 months ago on the show.
Yeah, like 6 weeks.
They tweeted out a link to one of our episodes, the episode that we talked about. It was MSP 27, Dick Hammer on Hillary Clinton, yeah. Which was a good episode, in which we discussed the Stamp Stampede and the Get Money Out movement, which, as you all know, is a recurring theme of this show, that we're very into the idea of getting money out of politics.
Oh, yeah.
So that was really cool. We were excited about that. Andy posted a picture of the retweet on his Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And when he posted that, he tagged the Stamp Stampede's account. They got in touch with Andy, said, the show is great. We love you guys. And if you want to talk to our campaign manager, please email Virginia at Stamp Stampede. So we were like, great, let's do that. And so very exciting, at the top of the show here, we actually did get in touch with the Stamp Stampede campaign manager, Edward Erickson, and he is on the phone with us right now. Edward, are you there?
Hey, everybody.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Hey. Good. How are you?
Good, good. We're really excited to have you on today. We're really behind your cause, and we're happy to have you.
Thanks. You know, this is really, it's going to take everybody getting behind this cause to be able to get real change in Washington, so thanks for the support.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Just right off the top, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but do you know if any of your social media people, I mean, did they listen to our podcast? Are they a fan of the podcast? Because I'm just going to warn you, they might be crazy then if they're really into the show. But
it's true. We have some fans of your podcast in the office right now.
Oh,
they're really
awesome.
Excited that we're doing this.
That is unbelievable. And that's really exciting. So thank you very much for saying that. We appreciate you guys listening. Let me ask you this. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in the Stamp Stampede thing. And, you know, just kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. My background, I was teaching political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I connected with Ben through some colleagues, and I met with him in 2012 when he was trying to organize some bird dogging efforts in the presidential campaign. So he was really interested in getting the presidential candidates to go on record in support of a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United and Buckley versus Vallejo and some of these horrendous Supreme Court decisions that said money is free speech and corporations are people. So in 2012, Barack Obama was the only guy who went on record saying that he would support a constitutional amendment, and he said that on Reddit. After that, you know, we went full-fledged into the stampede and started recruiting grassroots members to go out there and really, you know, this is guerrilla marketing, push the message everywhere, and create a lot of noise, create what Ben calls a petition on steroids.
Right.
And we're seeing some success now. I mean, where we are today, we've got five candidates who've now gone on record, got five presidential candidates on record in support of the constitutional amendment. We've got 12 candidates on record in support of various reforms to help the problem of corruption in Washington. And we have 155 members of Congress who have co-sponsored the Democracy for All amendment that would effectively overturn Citizens United.
Wow.
So we're making progress, and it has a lot to do with the grassroots momentum and folks like you on the podcast and folks all over the country who are mad as hell.
Yeah, and rightfully so. And that's the thing that we talk about on the show all the time.
Absolutely.
Is that to really have a true democracy, you can't have very extremely wealthy interests drowning out the voice of average people, which is what really attracted us to this idea to begin with. I think it's a fantastic idea. Let me ask you this. Have you received, as this is growing, as this is getting, because I think on the website it says that there's 15 states that have approved that they would go for a constitutional amendment. Have you gotten any pushback from other wealthy corporations, from other lobbyists, from any other groups that have gotten upset about this this campaign?
Yeah, there are a handful of staunchly conservative activists that are opposed to this campaign. You know, numero uno is Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz. Who's opposed to the amendment, and the Heritage Foundation.
Yep.
Has showed some opposition. But incidentally, you know, Tea Party, everyday Republicans, we've got a lot of bipartisan support there. So it's really the fringe conservative fringe that has shown some opposition.
Right. And that's interesting because you're saying the fringe has shown opposition, but I think a lot of people possibly would consider the Tea Party to be fringe, yet they're involved in something like this, which I think shows you that maybe the gridlock in Washington isn't as real as people want to make it seem. If you put out good ideas like this, you can actually get support from both sides of the aisle.
Shows progress.
Yeah. Andy, do you have a question about this?
I just wanted to ask you, do you have any sort of metric on tracking whether, you know, like where these bills go and if they are spent on campaigns and stuff like that?
Well, you know, no cash is spent on campaigns.
Sure.
You know, only checks are spent in campaigns.
Yep.
Incidentally, in 2014, Carl Levin, senator from Michigan, resigned. And Peter Land, the guy who took his seat at his inauguration party, Carl Levin gave him a $10 bill that was stamped not to be used for bribing politicians that he had changed. And so politicians are getting these bills in change. We also have photos with Barack Obama and a bill with Nancy Pelosi, Keith Ellison, a number of other members of Congress, also a whole slew of, you know, celebrities like David Crosby and Moby.
Awesome.
J.J. Abrams, you know, he's working on the new Star Wars movie. He's got a stamp in his house, and he's a supporter. So we're slowly making inroads among some celebrities. It's making waves in Washington. We've got over 50,000 people across the country stamping right now. Collectively, they're generating millions of impressions. And so the visibility is increasing, and we're amping up towards the 2016 election. We really want to make this the number one issue.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I mean, I think it's a very worthy cause. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I think another, like you mentioned, maybe fringe conservatives or people in the Tea Party do get involved in things like this. It's important, I think, because the idea is out there where people are trying to be strict constitutionalists, that this thing is set in stone and we can't amend it. But that's not the case. There are procedures to amend the Constitution, and I think this is up there with probably the most important thing that we could do to amend the Constitution if we were going to do something like that.
And that's the thing to remember. Almost every single generation for the last 200 years has amended the Constitution once, and at least six of the amendments were to undo bad Supreme Court decisions. And so there's nothing in the Constitution that says money is free speech, and there's nothing in the Constitution that says corporations are people. Those are interpretations of the Constitution, and it is absolutely within historical precedents to amend the Constitution. Some people would say it's to restore the Constitution to its original intent and to protect American democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great point, and I think that's... it's great that this campaign is addressing things like that.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask you this question. Do you obviously Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's is involved. This is his, he kind of spearheaded this thing. Do you get any kind of special ice cream? Do you get paid in ice cream? What's going on over there?
Well, Ben is a member of the Free Ice Cream for Life Club.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a lot of free ice cream that goes around.
Oh.
Right now we're doing a bumper sticker campaign in New Hampshire. You know, if you put a bumper sticker on your car, or if you see a bumper sticker and you send us a photo, we'll send you a free pint of ice cream. We do photo contests where we give away ice cream. You know, we're getting ready to do a big 4th of July event where we'll have free scoops there. And, you know, pretty much everywhere Ben goes, ice cream follows. So he's a good guy to hang out with.
Right. Very cool. All right. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us. We really appreciate this. It's very cool for us to, and actually you're our first phone interview guest on the program. So it's
That's
very
true.
Cool. You should feel honored by that. And we're honored to have you. Why don't you tell our listeners where they should go to get involved, what they can do, and, you know, anything else that you want to promote while you're on the phone with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So go to www.stampstampede.org to learn more about the campaign. You can get a stamp there. We sell them for $10 a pop, which covers our cost. It's a nonprofit. We don't make any money off the stamps. We're just trying to get them out there. So stampstampede.org and learn more about the movement and get involved.
That's perfect. Edward Erickson, the campaign manager for Stamp Stampede, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And let us know if you guys are doing anything. We can promote it on this show. We'd be happy to do it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thank you. And talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, how about that, Andrew? What do you think?
That was awesome, man. I'm really happy with that program. It's really exciting. It's all about, I mean, we're all about that idea on the show of getting money out of politics and giving the voice back to the people rather than corporations and, you know, extremely wealthy individuals. So I don't know. I couldn't have been happier with it.
No, me neither. It was very cool. And, you know, we were talking about it this week. Like, it's really, really cool that we got, cause you know, we love doing the show. We love all the support we get to get a response from a group that we admire.
Yeah.
To say that they actually listen to the show, people in the office, which is just amazing to us. It's just really, really cool. So we really appreciate Edward Erickson for joining us and the Stamp Stampede for everything they're doing. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a really good show lined up. As I mentioned, there's a story later on that involves the California drought that has some phenomenal quotes in it, a name that I haven't even told Andy about yet that is terrific, that I'm really excited to get into later in the show. And so stick around for that because it's maybe one of my favorite things we ever talk about in the show. I also have some really good sound clips, and I have some updates on some stuff. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about in the way of an update is the TPP. Last Friday, the House Democrats and conservative Republicans voted down what is called TAA legislation, which included TPA language. They were trying to pass these two things together.
Mm-hmm.
It was defeated 302 to 126. The interesting thing about it is that Barack Obama was on Capitol Hill pleading for passage of this thing, the TAA. It didn't happen. Basically, what the TAA is, it provides government aid to workers who lost their jobs due to free trade agreements, which, yeah, you're laughing because it's ridiculous. They're trying to gang a good thing with a really bad thing, the TPA, which is the fast track authority that would be given to President Obama, which we've talked about on the show. All right, so that failed. But then the House passed the TPA minus the TAA bill. It passed 219 to 211. Both now, at this point, both chambers of Congress have passed a TPA bill, but they're different bills. So they'd have to like convene and work out a compromise bill, basically, to pass it. There was a TAA revote today, and the House passed it 218 to 208, the fast track. So the Senate wanted it alongside the TAA, but it's not the case. It's a separate thing. But so now fast track authority has passed through both bodies of Congress. So the TPA is going to happen, the fast track bill, which is bad, which leads us to the TPP, and that's a real problem. I have some quotes. Listen to this guy. We'll move on from this in a second, but I just want to read this quote. This guy, David Schweikert, who's a Republican from Arizona.
No way.
Referring to TPA opponents as Nazi propagandists on the floor of the House, he goes, Goebbels would be proud of them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Like, what are you doing, man? Like,
Goebbels and Garrick.
Yeah.
He brings that into it.
Right, yes. Yes, people that don't want jobs shipped overseas and all this free trade stuff are Nazis.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. Do you have another quote?
No, that's it.
No, that's it. We just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the idea of the people who passed this. Just to throw that into the mix.
Yeah, we're just going
to
mention Goebbels.
Yeah, we're just going to put that out there and compare this to Nazis, which is obviously the same thing.
Yeah, well, of course. And the crazy thing is he's going, people that are opponents of the TPA are Nazi propagandists. So Elizabeth Warren is a Nazi propagandist. Mm-hmm. You know, Bernie Sanders, a number of Sherrod Brown, a number of these people are Nazi propagandists.
Sure.
They're just making it up. Why would a bipartisan group, like we were just talking about with Edward, why would a bipartisan group of Republicans, Democrats, who typically don't get along on anything,
yep,
why would they be against this? Because it must really be a problem if they're willing to set aside politics to say that it's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, but no, that's propaganda.
Sure.
All right. So that's just an update on that. Again, the TPA has now passed. It's not been signed into law yet, but once it does, then this really expedites the ability to put through the TPP and all that stuff. Again, the TPA is just yes or no votes. There's no amendments. There's no nothing.
Nope.
It's straight up and down. This passes or it doesn't. So wonderful. We're heading towards it. And look, no matter, this is what we talk about, because I think we've been chastised a couple times on this, you know, through emails and stuff, where it's like we're negative and we don't think anything can change.
Oh yeah,
it's not true. Things can change, but a lot of this stuff is kind of set in stone. Like this TPP, you knew it was going to pass eventually.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's that feeling of it's out of our hands. There's really,
yeah,
there's nothing we can do about it. And I get why people email us and say, you know, you guys are kind of down on things, but we're just trying to look at the reality of the situation. Of course, we believe change can happen, but there needs to be things in place like this movement to make those changes. It's not just going to happen by all of us hoping.
No, of course it is. You're right. And then that's the other thing. Like, even Congress people don't get, like we read a couple of weeks ago, that they don't even get to take notes on the bill. They don't get a copy of the bill. Like, so that's what we're talking about when we mean, like, yeah, some of this shit is inevitable, and it seems like this TPP thing is going to it's going to go through. So we'll keep our eye on that. That's a little update. All right. So this is a story I'm really interested in talking about. It involves Edward Snowden. The Sunday Times, which is a British newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch, incidentally.
Oh, hey.
The paper claims that Russia. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Before we even get into any of this stuff.
What?
We wanted to mention last night as I was preparing for the show,
oh,
we were both
God.
Doing research. Obviously, the South Carolina shooting, which is horrible.
Horrific.
Andy, you just wanted to bring it up and make mention to it because it happened last night, so there's not a ton of information. We know that they arrested the shooter, this Dylan Roof.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's going to be a week's worth of information coming out, and we're probably going to get into it more next week. But
yeah, I'm sure we definitely will. But I just wanted to bring it up, obviously, because it's huge news.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's horrible that somebody would walk into, and I'm not, don't get it the wrong way. I'm not a particularly religious person, but somebody to walk into a house of worship, basically, where people are in a prayer circle,
yeah,
and just start shooting randomly.
Well, and he was there for
an hour.
He said, which
yeah,
is like,
he
Jesus
sat
Christ.
Down. So he had an hour to sit there and make his decision. How much of a sociopath do you have to be? Because my only thought is, okay, if you have this in your head, if you're like a racist or whatever, and you're like, you're building yourself up in your car or however these things go, I don't know, but you're like, all right, I'm just going to go in, I'm going to do this, this is it. He sat down and observed these people for an hour and sat with them and like that, like saw, like that's humanity.
Yes.
Like seeing other people. Like, how, I don't know, it's just very, very troubling to me. Obviously, whenever any of these things happen, it's horrible. But it just, to sit there and be with other people watching them pray and then stand up saying, I'm here to kill black people, and then shoot nine people is I don't know.
No, I know. And some of the stuff I read, like quotes, is that, you know, you got to be filled with hate to do some of this. You're right. You also have to be crazy, which is definitely part of the situation, which is what we were talking about a little bit before we started the show.
Yeah.
And on top of that, let's call it what it is. It is domestic terrorism. It is a white guy going into a church of innocent people that are not
a historically black church.
Well, and that's the other thing, which we can get into next week. But there's you know, a deep history rooted in slave revolts and things like that in this church. It's got a deep history in this country. So this guy knows what he's doing. But he's a domestic terrorist. That's what it is, and let's call it that, because I think that you know, people are like, well, we don't call it when white people do it, or we don't say this or that. No, it is. He is a domestic terrorist. He's a lunatic. It doesn't excuse him. He's obviously crazy. And yeah, he's got, or he's not, or he just is truly filled with hate. He's you know, a real despicable person. You know?
I don't know. I don't know if I can believe that, because at, I'm 25. How old are you? You're 29?
Yeah, 47.
Yeah, 47. Yeah. At 21, I couldn't make a decision like that. I couldn't be, I mean, to be that, like, I don't think it's the hate. I think it's influence. Do you get what I'm saying?
Maybe. Like, what do you mean? Like, what do you think?
Like, I don't think he was that filled with hate to go shoot 9 people. I think he saw it as, like obviously something influenced him to be like, this is a good thing to do, or this is something I should do.
Right,
you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
I don't think a 21-year-old kid can be that filled with hatred. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean right.
Maybe we'll get more facts. As you said, we'll get more facts on his family. We know the one thing that came out was his dad recently gave him the weapon they suspected he used, which was a .45 caliber handgun, for his 21st birthday.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll find out about his parents, about his background, I'm sure. I don't know if, you know, they haven't gotten quotes or anything from them. So
no, and because it's too fresh. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I will say this. Looking at the picture, I saw a picture of him. He does have that fucking crazy look to him.
He has that James Holmes look.
Yeah, James Holmes, the other one that shot up the school.
Virginia Tech.
No, not Virginia Tech. The most recent with, like, the young kids. I can't think of his name.
Oh, my God.
I don't know
Newtown.
Why.
Newtown. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But in any event, right. But that's the look that this guy has, where you're like,
that blank stare. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll get more pictures, because I'm sure the kid had a Facebook. I'm sure he had a Twitter account.
Yeah,
like, we'll figure it out. I mean, James Holmes had like a J-Date profile or whatever. Like,
could you be not to make light of it, could you imagine being a person that's like, oh yeah, I'll go on a date with this fucking lunatic?
Yeah.
Like, you've got issues then.
No, he had a picture of a chick from a dating site with him.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so yeah, so that's a real tragic situation there.
It's horrible.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to mention about it today. Obviously, it just happened overnight, and we'll obviously probably going to have more on that next week.
I'm just glad they caught him, and they caught him so everybody knows, they caught him in North Carolina, because thank God the church had cameras, so they had a description of him, obviously, they had a description of his vehicle, and they had his license tag. They arrested him like 300 miles or 250 miles away in North Carolina in a stop that apparently went without incident, but he did have a gun on him.
He was cooperative.
Was cooperative, but he did have a gun on him, and apparently one quote I did see was one of the people in the church, it was a woman, she was shot, but she survived. And supposedly he said, I'm letting you live so you can tell people what happened.
Wow. See, like, that to me seems like, yeah, obviously you got to be a little like out of your mind to do something like this. But it's like a lot of this shit where he gets arrested cooperatively. He says shit like that. Like, that's irrational. You're thinking rationally there.
Yeah, that's
in an irrational. Obviously, it's a relative term, but you know what I mean.
Sure. So. But my fear is, again, we're going to go to this pushback on guns where it's like, no, don't think about the guns. It's not about that. It's the mental illness in this country. And Chris, you had a statistic about police. How many people were mentally ill that they killed this year?
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week, where I think it's of the 500 people they killed, 27% were mentally ill, had a mental illness.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, figure that out. I disagree with you slightly that it has nothing to do with guns. It does a little bit, obviously.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it
the
like
proliferation
that
of guns in this country is absurd, as opposed to other like modern nations. But, right, a big part of that equation is mental health in this country, and it's not a priority. And, you know, that obviously is going to play a part in this. Or this guy is just a hateful little fuck, but, you know,
maybe.
Who knows?
But, like, but it's sad because mental health doesn't make money. And that's a sad reality of it, and that's why it's overshadowed.
Yes.
And it's disgusting that something like this can happen, and I don't know, man. I'm just getting fucking sick of waking up to news of mass shootings.
Yeah.
And I don't want to disarm the country. I'm very pro, like, people should be able to have guns, but there can't be like a dad buying his son a gun. There's background checks on people and mental health checks on people for a reason.
Yeah, 100%.
You can't go buy a gun as a present for your son, who I'm sure there have been issues with in the past. Like, I'm sure his parents were fully aware, not fully aware, but somewhat aware that things were off.
You're absolutely right. Right? You think Wednesday was the first day this guy started acting weird or having like hatred towards black people because he made a comment about, oh, you rape our women or something? Like, he said, like, I read something, and don't quote me on that.
But
right, it's like you think this guy doesn't have any kind of like racial animus or whatever.
Yeah, this didn't happen overnight,
but maybe the parents are like that, and that's all shit we're gonna find out.
Yeah, you know? That's what we will find out, and it's very sad. It is, man. I'm so tired of, like I said, I'm just so tired of waking up to news like this. It's awful.
All right, so that's what we wanted to say about that. Obviously, we'll get into it more next week. Back to this other story. This is something I was really excited to talk about because it's frustrating and it's baffling even that this type of stuff exists. I have two good video clips at the end of what we're about to talk about. But first, let me explain what we're talking about. The Sunday Times, like I said, is a British newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch, which is just incidental, but I just like to throw it out there.
Yep.
The paper claims that Russia and China cracked the encrypted Snowden files while Snowden was in Hong Kong and Moscow. All right. So they're throwing that out there.
Putting it out there.
Just putting it out there. I have a couple of quotes from the article that we can read.
Okay.
You can tell me why it's hard to pay attention to what they're saying here for one specific reason, and then we'll get into that more. But these are a couple of quotes from the article, which, by the way, is behind a paywall, but I found the article on Pastebin, which is great. So, okay.
Shout out to Pastebin.
Yeah, word up. Oh, shout out to Polish Seltzer. Thanks for all your support.
Oh, yeah, and to Ethica, as always, wearing them. Reached out to them this week, and they, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Kyle Fawcett. I believe is the way to describe, or the way to say
the
it.
The way to describe that
name. The way
name.
To describe that name. No, he got back to me, and I just asked him, you know, I said, I'm a big supporter. I'm not looking for a sponsorship, but, like, would you be interested in, like, maybe just have an interest in the show? And he got back to me, and they're not sponsoring, but he gave me a code so I can get a little discount on my gear from now on, so I'll be able to keep rocking New Ethicas for every show.
It's a wonderful little treat.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome.
All right. So from this this article, these are some of the quotes. One senior Home Office official accused Snowden of having, quote, blood on his hands, although Downing Street said there was, quote, no evidence of anyone being harmed.
Wait, what? Say that one more time.
Blood on his hands, but there's no evidence of anyone being harmed. So, okay.
All right.
All right. A senior Downing Street source said, quote, it is the case that Russians and Chinese have information. It has meant agents have had to be moved and that knowledge of how we operate has stopped us getting vital information. There is no evidence of anyone being harmed. All right.
Okay.
So nope. Okay.
Again.
Fair enough.
Sure.
The confirmation is the first evidence that Snowden's disclosures have exacted a human toll. Quote, why do you think Snowden ended up in Russia? Said a senior Home Office source. Putin didn't give him asylum for nothing. His documents were encrypted, but they weren't completely secure. And we have now seen our agents and assets being targeted. Putin didn't give, he got asylum, but the reason why, whatever, we'll get into that in a minute. A U.S. intelligence source said the damage done by Snowden was, quote, far greater than what has been admitted.
How?
It's just these vagaries they can't prove.
Yeah.
It is not clear whether Russia and China stole Snowden's data. Is a line in this article accusing Snowden of getting information to them, or whether he voluntarily handed over his secret documents in order to remain at liberty in Hong Kong and Moscow.
Ooh.
Okay, he wasn't at liberty in Hong Kong. They
no,
didn't know he was there.
No, he
Watch
was not.
The documentary Citizen 4 is so obvious that he's okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Glenn Greenwald, who obviously writes for The Intercept, we talk about him all the time, and he was involved in the Snowden reporting. That's the journalist that was involved.
Yep.
He wrote an article on The Intercept about anonymous sources, which is what I was alluding to in this. One senior Home Office official, a senior Downing Street source, a U.S. intelligence source. Nobody's on record. These are just things that are being thrown out there willy-nilly by, you know, any official source in the government. So who the fuck knows? Like, who knows where these are coming from? They're just saying these things. They contradict themselves. And this is something from the article that is completely inaccurate. This is a complete inaccuracy. The Sunday Times says Snowden, quote, fled to seek protection from Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, after mounting one of the largest leaks in U.S. history. It's not true.
He didn't want to go there first.
No.
He wanted to go to Iceland.
Or
right?
Latin America. He fled from Hong Kong, bound for Latin America, via Moscow and Cuba. The U.S. revoked his passport while he was in the Russian airport, so he just had to stay there.
Yeah. How long do you stay there?
A couple of months, I think. He was there 2-3 months.
How do you stay in the airport for 2-3 months? Is it like that movie with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, people showed up and like got him blankets and crap and like some books, and he was just fucking hanging out in the airport.
Really?
Yeah.
That. Jesus.
Yeah, for months. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. You hear about that, and you're like, oh, okay, but he must have, like, went to a hotel at some point.
No, he was just in the fucking airport.
He was just sitting in the airport. Like, you bitch
sleeping on chairs.
Yeah, you bitch about your flight being delayed for a couple of hours. This guy's been in the airport for a couple months.
Right. He's like, I just want to go to Ecuador.
Yeah.
Please let me go to Ecuador.
Let me get a hotel room, for fuck's sake.
Okay.
I'm just trying to be a good person.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to help. All right, so that's the deal with this article, which was infuriating that they're going to throw out all these accusations with no purpose, like I mentioned.
And no backup to it.
No, there's no backup.
It's just all vague. It's all just, this is my opinion.
Here's what's interesting. I have a quote, a clip, rather, of the guy that wrote the article. He was on CNN.
Yeah.
And he admits something silly.
Oh, yeah, this is wonderful.
Just while I play this, can you just make sure it's recording the audio over here? Because we are producing this show. Just the two of us, baby, and it's going really well.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the clip of Tom Harper on the Sunday Times article. He was on CNN talking about this, and this shit is just fascinating. So let me get to that point. Andy's just going to make sure it's recording, and he's going to come sit down real quick.
The Home Affairs correspondent for the Sunday Times, who is reporting this story, and Tom joins us now live. Tom, thank you for being with us. Just want to dive a little deeper into the nature of your reporting. You name unnamed sources. How do senior officials at number 10 Downing Street know that these files were breached?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, George.
All right, so we're a couple seconds into this interview, and the guy that wrote the article says he doesn't know how they know, but he reported it anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah.
All we know is that this is effectively the official position of the British government. We picked up on it a while ago, and we've been working on it and trying to stand it up through multiple sources. And when we approached the British...
So what he's saying there is he's working backwards from the government told him.
Yep.
So now he's going to report on it, but then he's going to try to figure out how they know that.
Yeah, no, he's going to report on it first and then go back and be like, okay, let's make sure we get all this right.
Right, yeah, all right.
Government late last week with our evidence, they confirmed effectively what you read today in the Sunday Times. So it's... obviously allegations at the moment from our point of view, and it's really for the British government to defend it.
Do you understand what he's saying there? The government said one thing.
Yep.
We reported on it and then brought it back to them being like, is this how you know? And they were like, yep.
Yeah.
And now it's on them to defend it? Like
To figure it out, basically.
Yeah, they're the ones that put it out there, and you're just doing their bit. Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, I do have to ask, though, just in understanding the nature of what's in the files, how do they know what was in them if they were encrypted? Has the British government also gotten into these files?
Well, I mean, the files came from America and the UK, so they may already have known for some time what Snowden took. Again, that's not something that we're clear on, so we don't go into that level of detail in the story. We just publish what we believe to be the position of the British government at the moment.
Okay, so basically this investigative journalist or whatever you want to call him, is basically saying, we're just a propaganda arm for the government because they said so. Yeah. So we're like, all right, that's.
So we're just promoting it.
Yeah. And it's not our job to vet these facts. In fact, we're just going to go back to the government and be like, is this what happened? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's just make sure everything's cool. So we got it right. Yes? No. No, you didn't get it right. It turns out all of these facts are wrong. That's fine.
What a cherubic little goof that guy is.
Yeah. He's just sitting there like.
Yeah. Sorry.
Facts came from America and the UK, it turns out.
So, all right. So the garbage about Snowden. Like, yeah. This is what's infuriating. Again, like we talk about all the time. I love what Snowden did. I'm very happy that he did it. It's, again, not Snowden's job to protect. Snowden didn't even release the documents. He gave them to journalists. They're reported. They're reported on. So anything else that have whatever, we don't have to get into the whole thing, but it's just silly. They're going to throw out these accusations. Obviously, there's nothing behind them.
No,
there's no proof.
We go through this, it feels like, almost every episode.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Like, is there's no proof behind what these people are saying. All accusations because they're angry about what happened.
Well, and anonymous sources.
Yeah, and it's clearly like irrational, but probably. It's just they're angry about what happened, yeah. So they're going to accuse him of this, that, and the other. Yeah, and that's the end of it.
Absolutely right. I mean, it's obvious why they would react this way. Now, this is another one that I saw this week that I was like, Jesus Christ. Michael Hayden, who's the former NSA head,
yep.
Who's a real fucking spook and a ghoul, this guy.
Check out Mark Norman's Periscope, by the way.
Oh, yeah, you should check that out.
Spooky.
I have a clip. It's just like a minute of Michael Hayden, who's been interviewed by I guess the Wall Street Journal, and this is him answering some questions and just talking about the Snowden leaks, the outcome, and it's really telling. And then we can move on to the next thing, which I'm excited to talk about as well. But this is Michael Hayden, the former NSA head, talking about Edward Snowden and the fallout of the leaks.
Let's hear it.
Damn, that would have been cool if that hit right there. Right?
Yeah, that would have been. I was kind of
too bad.
All right.
Here we go.
Somebody would come up to me and say, look, Hayden, here's the thing. This Snowden thing is going to be a nightmare
look,
for you
Hayden.
Guys.
Look, Hayden. I know he's
Hayden.
Such a creep, this guy.
Here's the thing, man.
For about 2 years. And when you get all done with it, what you're going to be required to do is that little 215 program about American telephony metadata. And by the way, you can still have access to it, but you got to go to the court and get access to it from the companies rather than keep it yourself. I go, and this is it after 2 years? Cool.
So the former NSA head is like, yeah, the little joke thing that you did after Snowden released all this crucial information to try to help the American people. He's like, that's all they're going to require us to do, which is what we reported about a couple of weeks ago when this was, you know, when the Patriot Act expired and all that stuff. Again, it's removing a tiny piece of a tumor.
Yep.
It's not removing the whole tumor. And nope. And it's confirmed here by a guy who is a retired NSA head, a general. Like, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's clear that cancer is still growing.
Oh, 100%. He's yeah. cool with it.
Yeah.
Literally cool
he's,
with it.
He's like... And just the way he talks is so, like, fucked up.
Oh, he's
like,
a little piece of... Yeah, he's a dirtbag.
He's
yeah.
just...
Well, that's like... you'll notice at the end, too. I know. He's showing the size of his penis if you're watching on
yeah,
Daily Motion.
Yeah,
but, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because at the end, he does, like, very... It's, like, uber political. Like, I'm being charming, but also behind this charm, I'm just a total scumbag. All right, let's continue with this. I went back a second just so we hear him say that again, and then we'll just finish up the clip and we can move on.
Companies, rather than keep it yourself, I go, and this is it after 2 years? Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean.
Oh, that landed flat.
Yeah. Just to be clear, I took a selfie with the size of his penis.
Oh, very
That's
good.
What I was doing.
Oh, I don't
now.
Have the soundboard today. I would have made Joni Ernst laugh there, but I just didn't have
it. Yeah.
It's all right. That's okay. Right. Now, this is what's really... this goes along with the article, what he's talking about here.
Do you think he was actually acting for a foreign government?
That's Gerard Baker, the Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief. He's asking about Snowden. Do you think he was working for a foreign government?
So intelligence officers answer questions like that using inductive reasoning.
I hope so.
We go to
not information. Intelligence.
We go to data,
yeah, yeah.
And then we're supposed to draw generalized conclusions from data. And I got no inductive trail that tells me Snowden was helped.
Okay, no data says that Snowden was helped. No. Evidence is what he's saying doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. This is what I love about this guy.
On the other hand, if I go deductive on you, which is, this is what he did, how do I best explain it? I got my suspicions, but I'm not a deductive guy. I'm an inductive guy by profession, and therefore, I have no evidence.
So basically, so I have no evidence, but I am just going to put it out there that, you know, based on what happened, he probably did. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, okay. I don't have any evidence that Michael Hayden pooped himself during that interview, but if I look at the way he's sitting, I can kind of reason it out that he probably did.
Yeah, and that maybe he does have a small penis.
Just based on what he did with his fingers there. He put them,
Seems like he's used to making that measurement.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, you're exactly right.
But again, that's just, I'm an inductive person.
We have no proof of that. We're working on multiple sources to try to confirm that, but we don't have any proof.
We haven't got there yet.
No, we're not there yet. Very good. All right. So anyway, that's, pay attention when you hear people talking about anything with anonymous sources
and
we don't have any proof, but.
But this is what we think.
If they say we don't have any proof, but just stop listening.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, then you come back to me when you have proof.
Right.
How about that?
That's the end of it. Yeah. We don't have any proof, but no, that's it.
No, but.
Drown it out at that point. Right. Put a fucking podcast on.
Terrific. The Mandatory Stampson Podcast.
Yeah.
Stamp Stampede. Go check it out.
Mandatory Stampson Podcast.
Mandatory Stampson. Yeah, maybe we call
that
a.
I was going to say that it probably should be the title.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so this is something I'm really excited about, and I think we were talking about it before. I think you had read something about this as well. The Pope Francis.
Oh, yeah.
Who seems like a really fucking cool guy.
Coming through
guy.
Big time.
Yeah, he spoke on climate change today. I have information from, like, the leaked document, but he gave the speech today.
Yeah.
A leaked draft, which is now out, of an encyclical says that the Pope will align himself with environmental movement and its objectives. An encyclical, for those of you who are not as religious as we are, is a letter that he sent to the bishops. Basically, it's like a policy paper, like saying, like, here's what I think. Yeah. This is how we're going to go about these issues. All right. I have some good videos at the end that we're going to listen to. A Heartland Institute, which is like they fund climate denial and all this stuff. And that James Inhofe, the one with the snowball, he's in the video. So phenomenal. And then I have Jeb Bush talking about it. It's really quick. But anyway, I have some quotes from the Pope. Listen to this guy. This guy, what's fascinating about this, it's not just coming out of a religious point of view, although it is. He attacks people. He goes after people. He has policy that this guy's
talking
about.
The man's calling for revolution.
But essentially, he is. Yeah. That is literally the case. Let me read these quotes because I think they're phenomenal, and then we'll get into some of these sound clips, which are possibly even better. Quote, Pope Francis, humanity is called to take note of the need for changes in lifestyle and changes in methods of production and consumption to combat this warming, or at least the human causes that produce and accentuate it. Numerous scientific studies indicate that the greater part of the global warming in recent decades is due to the great concentration of greenhouse gases given off above all because of human activity. Now, what's fascinating about this is that the arguably the most religious man on earth is more accepting of science than senators.
Yeah. How about that?
It's amazing.
I don't even know how to comprehend that, to be honest with
Shakespeare would be stunned by the irony.
He would be. He absolutely would be.
Quote, in this encyclical, I especially propose to enter into discussions with everyone regarding our common home. I love that phrase, our common home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
We're all in it together, baby. We're not going anywhere.
I was just going to say that. We're all in this together. Like, let's just stop fucking each other over.
Yeah. This is our common home.
Yeah.
There is no other home. We live on Earth. On Earth. We don't own it. We live on Earth. It's our common home. I love that phrase.
I like it.
The draft rejects outright carbon credits. And this is even better. This guy goes into the carbon credits and carbon tax.
He's into it.
Yes, he's an 80-year-old man who's super religious. And he's like, no, carbon tax is silly. He says they could, quote, give rise to a new form of speculation and would not help to reduce the overall emission of polluting gases. It could help, quote, support the super consumption of certain countries and sectors. Yes.
Yeah.
He's 100% right. Just because you say, well, to use X amount of carbon, you owe us $1 million, corporations have that money, And they're still then just putting the carbon out. It doesn't matter that you put a price on it. There's always going to be money to pay for it.
Exactly. Again, this goes back to the underlying theme of everything. There's always going to, if you put a price on something, there's always going to be somebody who can pay for it.
Yeah, and the people that are making the money by causing the problem have the money,
exactly.
Obviously. Right. So I love that. I mean, I absolutely love it that the Pope came out and said this. And terrific. Now, the reason I brought some of these clips, why I find it interesting, is because conservatives and climate change deniers are the base. They're religious.
Yeah,
like they're
for the
base.
Most part, yeah.
They're very religious. So it's kind of ironic that it's all tied up in that. And watch how quickly these people are willing to just like throw the Pope under the bus. They could give a fuck about what he has to say. So I'm going to play a quick, this is from The Guardian. They went to a Heartland Institute conference about climate change, which they're against, you know, they don't
think
we're causing it. Within the last couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. And then I just have Jeb Bush because I think it's, you know,
because
he's out there
not,
and he's probably going to run, you know, he's probably going to be the nominee. So we'll listen to him talk about it. But anyway, so this is the clip from the Heartland Institute. I just got to skip ahead to the relevant portion of this thing. Hold on.
Way to go,
Pope. And this
very
big year for climate.
Is it Pope?
He's talking to James Inhofe, the snowball moron.
Douchebag.
Oh, everyone's going to ride the Pope now. You know, that wonderful. Well, the Pope ought to stay with his job and let us stay with ours.
I think he's very ill.
Meanwhile, that's the guy. We played clips of him quoting scripture.
Yes.
And saying, like, climate change is not a problem. Now he's going to tell the Pope, you do your thing.
Yeah.
You're using the Pope's goddamn manual.
Yeah. You're using his guidelines to be like, nah, that's not really what I meant.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
Formed and it's he's ill-judged in doing this.
I don't believe that this is a moral issue.
No, the health of the planet is not a moral issue.
No.
It's an economic one.
Yeah, that's it.
Unfortunately, the Pope has been inundated with green advisors.
The Pope has been lobbied
by
the wacko environmentalists. That's what's happening here, yeah. Except for the fact that he's from Latin America, like lived amongst the poor his whole life. Like,
yeah,
he's a truly like salt of the earth guy.
Yes.
Rejects consumerism and all this stuff. Yeah, yeah. He must be on the take.
Yeah, he's
from
definitely
fucking
on
what
the
Greenpeace?
Take.
What are you talking about?
Because that's his interest.
Yeah,
obviously.
And the Heartland Institute, no, they're not tied up in oil interest or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, I think the Pope's irrelevant on this issue. My feeling is.
Do you notice everybody they're interviewing is retired, by the way?
Oh, yeah, because they're just now they're
now they're just in it for the green.
100%,
that's it.
Right.
Like,
this guy's literally wearing a green coat.
He is.
Prescott Crocker, bond trader, piece of garbage. All right,
yeah, like this guy doesn't have a fucking $20 million home, probably.
Of course. And we're actually going to get into, again, this article that I was talking about the drought. We're going to get into people that maybe have $20 million homes that have some interesting ideas about water restrictions.
Yes.
All right, let's continue with this real quick.
The Catholic Church has been losing its support, losing its congregation, and he's just one more opinion.
I think the Pope is seriously, terribly misinformed.
Again, retired.
Yeah, Dennis Bussell, an engineer, retired. He thinks the Pope's ill-informed.
Yeah.
He's doing a terrible disservice to the entire Catholic theology. He is way, way out of line.
Yeah, that motherfucker. How dare he?
How dare he bring it up that we're destroying the planet?
Right.
The place where we all live, where at the end of the day, if any of us are experienced discomfort at all, we will be outraged. Remember that.
Yes.
Remember that.
Yes.
Just think about that. When your air conditioning doesn't work, you're outraged. Well,
right.
Think about when there's fucking fireballs flaming down on the earth. Like, think about that. Or when, like, everything goes to shit. What are we going
to
do?
Can you believe that? This is what's fascinating about this to me. It's like we're in a situation where we are like the religious guy, the Pope is the one defending science, and the scientists and engineers are the ones essentially being like, it's not a problem. Leave it up to God. Like, what the fuck is going on? It's an age of total novelty. It's crazy. It's amazing.
It's
amazing. Let's just wrap this up. We got like less than a minute. Here we go.
Well, I think it's going to be a big mistake for it. I think that he's going to come up with a document that is going to be ripped to shreds.
And I think it's going to confuse Catholics ultimately. The Pope is basically being horribly ill-served.
Considering the popes in the past have put people to death on the by incinerating them. What they did, the Pope did to Galileo. I don't subscribe to anything he says at this point.
Saying that because other popes did bad shit that this one is wrong is, it's the same argument of like, well, if Obama's doing it, like, because other presidents did shit, I'm never going to listen to the president again.
Yeah.
That's
the same argument.
It's the same argument, right.
Because I think if he were to see the science as it is, then he would understand that it's more important to raise people out of poverty and give them that opportunity.
He said that. It's a defense of the poor.
He's yes.
Very much in defense of the poor. All the time.
All the time.
Rather than fighting a mythical global warming crisis.
A mythical global warming crisis.
Church and state is rapidly vanishing when it comes to climate. You know, it's okay to co-opt religion to advance the climate agenda. And I think that's just going to backfire on him.
Amazing. Again, they're saying that they're co-opting religion to combat climate change. What about all the other, where the line is blurred between church and state? Abortion, gay marriage. These are fundamental planks of the conservative platform.
Yeah.
They fund conservative, like, it's bananas, this whole thing.
It is.
And skeptics have their work cut out for them to try to overpower the Pope's influence, yeah.
But I believe the truth will win out. I believe that the truth is on our side.
All right, then they...
That, you guys, this is kind of neat. You know, it's the first time in the history of a United States Senate that a senator has thrown a snowball at the presiding officer.
Hilarious. He was giving a speech in off, showing his own clip of throwing the snowball. Like, he went home that day and was like, nailed it.
Yeah.
He's like, so proud of himself. His children rallied around him at the door, like, way to go, Papa. You didn't embarrass us at all today.
Yeah, no, you're not an asshole.
he is. I wish I had my buzzer. He is an asshole. All right, this is just Jeb Bush talking about it. I want to just play it because obviously he's going to be an important player in the coming election cycle. And it is amazing how much more articulate and like smart Jeb Bush comes across.
Do you think he's going to win?
No.
No?
I think Hillary's going to win. Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to get the nomination probably, yeah. But
oh, I think he definitely will.
Yeah. All right, so this is Jeb Bush talking about it, and then we can move on to, yes, that is the next story, my favorite story of all time.
First of all, Pope Francis is an extraordinary leader. He speaks with such clarity. He speaks so differently, and he's drawing people back into the faith, all of which I'm, as a converted Catholic now of 25 years, I think is really cool.
He was a Buddhist at first, Jeb Bush, raised Buddhist. No, I'm just...
Oh, I was like, shut the fuck up.
I hope I'm not like going to get castigated for saying this by my priest back home, but I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or from my pope. And
I get it from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what he says as it relates to climate change and how that connects to these broader, deeper issues before I pass judgment. But I think religion ought to be about making us better as people, and less about things that end up getting into the political realm. So I'm a little skeptical about this.
That guy in the background, he's just like hiding a smile. He's just like, mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, so that's old Jeb Bush talking about climate change and the Pope. It's interesting like that he would draw a distinction between what the Pope said and bettering ourselves.
Yeah.
What the Pope said is bettering us. As a species, as humankind, obviously, if we're being more respectful of lower income nations, people that are in desperate situations, and the planet itself, it's obviously, if we can find a way to work our economic system and the way that we do business and have a modern society around being sustainable and environmentally friendly and all that stuff, that's a huge benefit to us. That's
gonna how go could it not
hand.
Be?
Of course, because the way we're doing it now is destroying it. So that's the big problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're ready for this?
Because
you're gonna be thrilled. California drought is a big deal, obviously related to climate change. And I wanted to say this: I don't look around for stories that kind of fit together.
Yeah.
I just have the sources. I know where to go to find them. And they all interlock because it's not a made-up narrative. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, climate change is a thing. This is a thing, and the story is phenomenal. So, Rancho Santa Fe in Southern California, as of July 1st, will be subject to water rationing for the first time in its 92-year history. Governor Jerry Brown called for a 25% reduction in April, which we talked about, I think, on the show, Rancho Santa Fe went up 9% in consumption since that. Okay. So that gives you an idea what kind of people.
They're just running showers like for no reason.
Literally.
Just like, fuck it.
In this article I read, they said that a lot of people upped their consumption to try to make the baseline level of like what they use higher. So when they were.
When it's reduced, they'll still have more.
Right.
Genius.
All right. So the median income in this area is $189,000. So we're talking about wealthy people. Yep. Phil Mickelson lives in this area. Okay.
Let's not drag him into this.
No, he has nothing to do with it, but I'm just saying. But it just gives you an idea. Okay. Listen to some of these quotes, because the quotes are funny, and then we can just move on, but it's just hilarious. This guy, Steve Yukos, retired resident. He was a retired, like, stockbroker.
Okay.
People, quote, should not be forced to live on property with brown lawns, golf on brown courses, or apologize for wanting their gardens to be beautiful. We pay significant property taxes based on where we live, and no, we're not all equal when it comes to water.
Jesus H.
I love it so much because he's just unapologetically like a total dickbag.
Yeah, he's just a total asshole who's like, no, my golf course needs to be green. I'm not putting on fucking, God.
What, I work hard my entire life to come home to a fucking brown lawn?
Yeah, like get the fuck out
of here. What is this, North Korea? Yeah, this guy's infuriated. All right.
I'm not chipping from a brown fairway.
Yeah, right.
You fucking dick.
Oh my God, it's so funny. All right, this might be my favorite quote in the world. Okay, of all time.
All right.
Gay Butler is the name of this person. She's a woman named
wonderful.
Gay Butler.
Which you could only be rich to be named that.
Yeah.
Because or else you would have a horrible life.
Yeah, you would change it to like Charlotte Butler.
Yeah.
Not Gay Butler. Gay Butler, who is an interior designer and owner of a show horse named Bear, which she was riding when she was interviewed. So everything she's saying that I'm going to read this quote, she was on a goddamn show horse.
They're following her around like with a boom mic while she's riding her show horse. She doesn't have time to get off the goddamn show horse to do an interview. All right. Let's listen
to this quote. Quote, I think we're being overly penalized and we're certainly being overly scrutinized by the world. It angers me because people aren't looking at the overall picture. What are we supposed to do? Just have dirt around our houses on 4 acres? Yes!
Yes, your house on 4 acres. Yes.
She's angry. She's made angry by the suggestion that they'd stop, just have a dirt lawn.
Yeah, while she's trotting around.
Yeah, while she's on her show horse. Yeah. Bear. Well, what do you think? Bear's just, his feet are going to get hurt if he's running on dirt and pebbles.
No.
This is the last quote. You could put 20 houses on my property and they'd have families of at least 4. In my house, there's only 2 of us. They'd be using a hell of a lot water than more water than we're using.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I don't know what her point is. Like, because it's just the two of them, and if there was more people living there, they'd be wasting more water, so just leave us alone? Like,
I don't understand.
Nobody does. No. Nobody gets it. Bear's like, oh, I don't get it.
Yeah. No, he's shod. He's fine. That means he has shoes on, by the way. He doesn't. Yeah, the horse is shod. He doesn't mind trotting around on dirt. It's not going to bother him. He's good.
Little equine trivia.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because it's like, wow, you can't write that. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like when you talk about, oh, the super rich are ruining the country. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Gay Butler.
They don't think that everyone kind of deserves water.
If I'm ever rich, I'm going to have a gay butler named Gay Butler.
I think
like in the movie Birdcage. Have you ever seen that with Robin Williams? With the butler that walks around without shoes on?
Yeah, well, Wonderful. That's terrific. Yeah. All right, so anyway, that's not super like crucial, but that's hilarious. I just wanted to bring it up.
That's amazing.
Last thing I wanted to bring up is a sad one, and it's like, it's frustrating, and I know you're going to jump on board with this as well.
We're closing with a sad song?
No, I don't know. We could just chit-chat a little bit at the end. Maybe we'll leave it on an upswing. Colorado Supreme Court.
It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. This involves medical marijuana. This guy, Brandon Coates, who's a quadriplegic, who I would assume probably doesn't have an easy life being quadriplegic.
No.
He was fired by Dish Network in 2010 for smoking weed at home and off duty. The Supreme Court has ruled that he was not protected under the state's, quote, lawful activity statute. All right. He received, this guy, Brandon Coates, received satisfactory performance reviews all 3 years he worked at Dish, never accused or suspected of being high at work.
Mm-hmm.
He was fired by them, and the Supreme Court said yeah, that makes sense. Even though his job performance didn't suffer at all, he has obviously a serious medical condition. He's 80% paralyzed. His spine is broken. He has seizures and shit.
Oh, Jesus.
That's what he said. The connection can't be made, but his legs still work, which must be infuriating to him. So his legs can move if he has a seizure or something.
Oh my
but
God.
But he can't make his legs move.
Jesus. Could you imagine?
No.
No,
it's a
you can't fathom.
No.
No.
No. And then when you go home, you're like in pain or whatever. You just want to chill out. You smoke some weed, and then you get fired from your job for that, even though it had nothing to do with your job performance.
Just goddamn quadriplegic. You're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's...
That's... That,
it's horrible. It makes no sense. This is just a quote from the Dish Network lawyer Megan Martinez. He tested positive, had THC in his system. We're alleging that he was using THC at the workplace. The definition of use is in the Medical Marijuana Act. It's the employment of something, the longstanding possession of something. He smoked marijuana while at home, but he crossed the threshold to his office with THC in his system. The use is the effects. It's the THC. It's the whole point of marijuana. So when he came to work, he was using. That's asinine.
That is. That is ridiculous.
If he goes home and smokes weed at 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, midnight, and wakes up at 8 the next morning, he's not fucking high anymore.
No.
It's none of the effects of marijuana.
No, it's so...
Unless he ate it, but he didn't.
No, and it's so ridiculous that, like, that somebody could go home, another employee could go home, pound a fucking bottle of Jack Daniels, and legitimately wake up still intoxicated the next morning and go to work, and there's no issue with that.
No, what are they going to do about it? They can't tell.
Yeah.
And again, this guy was never accused of being high at work, and they swabbed his mouth. That's how they did it, and they obviously found THC. Yeah, because he had fucking THC in his mouth, so.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's high.
No. The man's a guy. He's a quadriplegic. Like, come the fuck on.
Yeah,
it's legal in Colorado.
Yes.
Like, it's legal there. It, like, 100%. Not only did this man have a medical card, now it's 100% legal.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, because they're saying because it's federally illegal, like, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah,
fuck yourself.
Yeah, fuck
Just a little addendum to that. The U.S. legalization has not led to a rise in adolescent use.
Nope, not at all.
Studying the journal Lancet, in the journal Lancet Psychiatry, covered findings from 24 years and a million adolescents. Legalization has not led to the rise in adolescent use, and use has dropped among eighth graders. It's actually gone down.
Well, that's good.
In states that legalize it. All right. So that's what I got today. That one just really frustrates me because it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, that's annoying.
You know what the guys do, and so what?
Yeah.
Even if say he did show up at work a little stoned, who cares?
And he's doing it, and he's getting satisfactory reviews. Like, he's doing his job well.
Right.
Let the man live. Just let him do his thing. It's like it's clearly like it's hard. And I don't want to go like down that road if it's hard enough for this guy, but.
No, but it is.
The man's a goddamn quadriplegic. Like, let him like do his thing. He's obviously has a lot of issues, and if this, it's a medical thing. If this relieves some kind of pain or can somehow stop or prevent seizures at least for a little while, then let him do it.
Of course, and beyond that, we're talking about mental health in this country.
Yeah.
This guy, you think it's not stressful to be this guy? You think when he goes home, he smokes a little weed, he relaxes, oh, I'm watching TV, a laugh.
Yeah, he listens to Mandatory Samson.
The Mandatory Samson podcast, sure.
And,
yeah, come on, man. And that's a mental health thing, for real. That's a mental health thing.
Of course it is. You think it's not wildly stressful? Like, and you even said, and this was my first thought, the guy smokes a little weed at 8 o'clock and goes to bed. Think about even going to bed. Getting yourself into bed for this man is a challenge.
Yes, his whole day is a hassle. He's doing the right thing. He's going to work. He's trying to be involved.
Yeah.
And they're gonna fuck this guy out of his money. Meanwhile, this has been going on since 2010. So now you're talking 5 years. I don't know if he's got another job, but you're talking lost wages, all this shit.
Everything.
Lawyers, bills, and he loses.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. All right, so I'm out of stories, but I don't want to end on a sour note. You got anything else going on, Andy? Anything you want to talk about? I don't want to put you on the spot, but you got anything going on here? I did totally put you on the spot.
No, I mean, I think we covered everything well today. I mean, that's a shitty story, but I'm sure we should actually look into it. Like, did he get another job? We'll do a little update next week.
Well, why don't we talk about this? We were setting up the studio the other day. You had a song playing all day, which I love the song. My good friend Caroline has a tattoo of the name of the song on her wrist. What is the song that we're going to end the episode with? Because it's just, you've been in love with it all week.
Well, no, I've been in love with it for forever, my whole life. But we're going to end with Wild Horses by the Rolling Stones, because it's absolutely one of my favorite songs of all time. And if you don't like it, you're a crazy person. It is like the absolute, I don't know. It's so good. And just the background of it, it was recorded when they were at Muscle Shoals, which is a great documentary. You should check it out on Netflix if you have it. It's just, there's a very cool story behind it. Keith Richards wrote it, Mick Jagger sings it, and it's just a beautiful song.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, it's great. When I came in, I was like, oh, listen, and then we were just singing it all day.
Yeah.
Because it just gets stuck in your head. Yeah, it's a great song. All right, guys, listen, I think that was a good episode. I think we kept it tight. I thought it was a good, we covered some good topics. Uh-huh. That was fun. thank you once again to Edward Erickson of Stamp Stampede for joining us. We really appreciate it. It was so cool to have you on the show.
It was exciting
to do a phone interview for the first time, and we're very supportive of the cause. Thank you, everyone, for listening and supporting us. It is, it's truly like exciting and fun to do the show. I love it.
It is, man.
Preparing for it, we get excited all week to do it, and it's really, it's just really fun to sit here and do the show, and to get support and feedback and see that we're actually like
resonating with people.
Yeah, resonating out there. It's really, really amazing.
It's really cool. Super exciting for us, and yeah, we love you guys. Thank you so much.
Please continue to support us.
Yeah.
By visiting soundcloud.com/mandatorySamson. You can follow us on there. Our subscriptions are going up. We really appreciate it.
We do.
Do leave a comment on the SoundCloud. We will answer those as always. We appreciate it. You can also go on dailymotion.com/standupnewyorklabs. We live stream this show every Thursday around 4:30. Depends on
whether we
get a little late start or not, but you can check it out. When you're on there, you can just search for Labs Live.
Yep.
Because we recorded Stand Up New York Labs, so it's Labs Live. That's the live stream link for all the shows that we do, so it's very cool. And you can check out full episodes on there. The link is in the SoundCloud. When it goes up, I put the full episode link, so you can check it out. You can also email us at mandatorysamson@gmail.com. You can go on Twitter. I'm at @mansamp. The guy sitting across from me is
@a_lozzi, L-O-Z-Z-I.
And you can find us on all the other things, Instagram,
the same
Snapchat.
On all platforms.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
I'm mansamp across all platforms, as I like to say.
A-Lozzi across all platforms. And have been getting crazy amounts of followers lately, by the way. Thanks, guys. That's been like, it's so weird. Like a lot on Twitter, on Instagram, everywhere. It's great.
It's very cool. Guys, listen, I got a question for you. I don't know. Is this what they call a teaser in the radio biz? Will Joey Noe return to the program next week? Only time will tell. Tune in and find out. Until then, we love you. Enjoy the sounds of the Rolling Stones, Wild Horses, and go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
you decided to show me the same.